Roku has what you need to make your college home away from home feel more like your own. Make your dorm the place to be with Roku TV. Or bring a Roku streaming stick to easily access all your favorite free and premium content like iHeartRadio. Stream your favorite playlist with the Roku Vibe Setting Smart Light Strips to sync your music to millions of colors and make your dorm feel more like you. Make your dorm the place to be with Roku TV, streaming players, and smart lights. Head to Roku.com or your favorite retailer to deck out your dorm.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
On Saturday, February 22nd at 1:30 p.m. Eastern, it's the Pro Volleyball Federation's first All-Star match. The league's biggest stars will clash in a can't-miss event hosted in the Indy metro area, home of the Indy Ignite. Catch every serve, spike, and save live on CBS. Don't miss this historic showdown of volleyball's finest. The Pro Volleyball Federation All-Star Match on February 22nd at 1:30 p.m. Be there.
And we return to Our American Stories. Up next, a story from John Meacham. He's the author of numerous best-selling books on American leaders and visionaries, from FDR to Andrew Jackson to George H.W. Bush. But today, we'll hear John discuss Thomas Jefferson at a Library of Congress book talk. Let's get into the story. Take it away, John.
Jefferson remains today what he was in life, a vivid, engaging, contradictory figure, flawed and imperfect, at once monumental and very human. His vices and his virtues are outsized, epic, and all too real. So, too, are America's. To look closely at Jefferson is to look closely at ourselves, then and now. His circumstances were particular. Yet the general issues that consumed him are constant: liberty and power, rights and responsibilities, the keeping of peace, and the waging of war. He was a politician, fundamentally a politician, a public man, in a nation in which politics and public life became and remain so central. He once wrote, "Man feels that he is a participator in the government of affairs, not merely at an election, one day in the year, but every day." And in doing so, Jefferson anticipated a world governed by cable news. He is, in his way, immortal. Yet because of his flaws and his sins, he strikes us as mortal, too. A man of achievement who is nonetheless susceptible to the temptations and compromises and ambitions that ensnare all of us. He was not all he could be. No politician, no human being ever is. Yet despite all his shortcomings and all the inevitable disappointments and mistakes and dreams deferred, Jefferson left America and the world in a better place than it had been when he first entered the arena of public life. That he did not live a perfect life, that he failed to deliver on the promise of his own words in the Declaration of Independence, that he has been condemned as a hypocrite in the eyes of history, are, to my mind, reasons not to excoriate him, but to engage with him. George Washington inspires awe, John Adams respect, But with his grace and hospitality, his sense of taste and love of beautiful things, of silver and art and architecture and gardening and food and wine, Jefferson is more alive, more convivial. Politically, 19th century secessionists and 20th century states' rights purists have found him a hero. Progressive leaders from Woodrow Wilson to FDR to Truman have believed him to embody the best impulses of the American tradition of popular government. FDR had what I would safely refer to as a man crush on Thomas Jefferson. So let's spend a moment with the man himself. Lean and loose-limbed, Thomas Jefferson rose with the sun every morning, swung those long legs out of bed, and plunged his big feet into a basin of cold water, a lifelong habit he believed good for his health. WebMD did not start the various issues we have with slightly shaky analysis. At Monticello, the metal bucket was brought every morning to his bedside. It wore a groove on the floor next to the alcove bed. In doing this book, through the great grace of the trustees of the Thomas Jefferson Foundation, I was allowed to spend the night in Jefferson's bedroom. It wasn't as much fun, apparently, as he often had. But I found that they put me on an air mattress. It was fascinating. What I learned was I saw that groove and asked what it was, and it was the bucket that was broad, so his feet would be sort of wake him up. The other was that he had designed the house, and very little was done by accident in Thomas Jefferson's life. He designed the house so that as the sun rose every morning, the first set of rooms the light hit were his rooms. And later that day, I happened to walk down to the graveyard on the other side of the hill at sunset and realized that the last place on Jefferson's Mountain where the light hit was his grave. So from the beginning of the day to the very end, he tried to soak up every possible moment to make something of it. He was 6'2½", and the Jefferson who came to the presidency had sandy hair, which had been, although reddish in his youth, was graying. His freckled skin, always susceptible to the sun, was wrinkling a bit. His eyes were penetrating but elusive, alternately described as blue, hazel, or brown. He had great teeth. He loved his wife, his books, his farms, good wine, architecture, Homer, horseback riding, history, France, the Commonwealth of Virginia, spending money, buying books, and his daughters. He believed in America and in Americans. He thought they were capable of virtually anything they put their minds to. Whatever they can, they will, he said of his countrymen in 1814. His longtime rival, Alexander Hamilton, and a word on Hamilton, I've been out now for 3 years or more talking about Jefferson, and in many audiences I will have someone say, well, I'm really a Hamiltonian. What that means is they're a banker. The real Alexander Hamilton once said that Jefferson was, quote, I love this, among the indolent and temporizing rulers who loved to loll in the lap of Epicurean ease and seemed to imagine that to govern well is to amuse the wandering multitude with aphorisms and oracular sayings. He was a brilliant man and an invaluable founder, but I think Hamilton had this wrong. Jefferson craved control over people and over events, and he knew that to govern well required unrelenting, if largely hidden, work. There was nothing indolent about the political ambition of Thomas Jefferson. Judged by the raw standard of the winning and keeping of power, he was the most successful political figure of the first half century of the American Republic. For 36 of the 40 years between 1800 and 1840, either Thomas Jefferson himself or a self-described adherent of his philosophy was president of the United States, John Quincy Adams being the one exception. Madison, Monroe, Jackson, Van Buren. This unofficial and I think little noted Jeffersonian dynasty is unmatched in American history. He had big dreams, but he understood that dreams become reality only when their champions are strong enough and wily enough to bend history to their purposes. Broadly put, philosophers think and politicians maneuver. Jefferson's genius was that he could do both, often simultaneously. And that is the art of power. He possessed this talent for politics, for philosophy, for education. He was a vital maker of the nation's public, intellectual, cultural lives. He was a master of emotional and political manipulation, sensitive to criticism, intoxicated by approval, obsessed with his reputation, devoted to America, irresistibly drawn to the great world. As a planter, as a lawyer, as a legislator, as a governor, as a diplomat, as Secretary of State, Vice President, and President, he spent much of his life seeking control over himself and power over the lives and destinies of others.
And you've been listening to John Meacham, author of Thomas Jefferson, The Art of Power, a speech he gave at the Library of Congress. And my goodness, dead on in all aspects and respects to Thomas Jefferson. He was vivid and engaging, contradictory, flawed, and monumental, Meacham said. To look closely at Jefferson is to look closely at ourselves. He was not all he could be, Meacham said. No one is. But Jefferson left the world better when he left it. When we come back, this man who could maneuver and think, the story of Thomas Jefferson continues here on Our American Stories.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to have supervision, enhanced hearing, extraordinary reflexes, to be, dare we say, superhuman? Well, Roku's new Pro Series TV can't do any of that for you. But with a 4K screen, side-firing speakers, and a blazing fast refresh rate, it'll sure feel like it. Elevate your entertainment using all your favorite apps like iHeart and play all your music, radio, and podcasts with the new Roku Pro Series. Your senses aren't better. Your TV is.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
During tax season, your sensitive info does a lot of traveling to places you can't control. Stopping off at payroll, your accountant or tax preparer, and countless other data centers on its way to the IRS. Any of them can expose you to identity theft because they all have the info on your W-2, just the ticket for criminals to steal your identity. No wonder the IRS reported tax fraud due to identity theft went up 20% last year. You need LifeLock. They monitor millions of data points per second and alert you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialists will fix it, backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. And restoration is guaranteed, or your money back. Don't let identity thieves take you for a ride. Get LifeLock protection for tax season and beyond. Join now and save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
On Saturday, February 22nd at 1:30 p.m. Eastern, it's the Pro Volleyball Federation's first All-Star Match. The league's biggest stars will clash in a can't-miss event hosted in the Indy metro area, home of the Indy Ignite. Catch every serve, spike, and save live on CBS. Don't miss this historic showdown of volleyball's finest. The Pro Volleyball Federation All-Star Match on February 22nd at 1:30 p.m. Be there.
And we return to Our American Stories and the story of Thomas Jefferson, as told by best-selling author and historian John Meacham. John is the author of Thomas Jefferson, The Art of Power. Let's return to the story.
He has most commonly been thought of as the author of America, or as its architect, a figure who articulated a vision of what the country could be, but was otherwise kind of a detached dreamer. Yet he did not rest once his words were written or his ideas entered circulation. He was a builder and a fighter. Quote, what is practical must often control what is pure theory. Moreover, the habits of the governed determine in a great degree what is practical. The habits of the governed determine in a great degree what is practical. By force of nearly 2.5 centuries of habit, we tend to view our history as an inevitable chain of events leading to a sure and certain conclusion. There was, however, nothing foreordained about the American experiment. To treat it as a set piece, pitting an evil empire of Englishmen against a noble band of colonists, does a disservice to both, for it caricatures Britain and it minimizes the anguishing complexities that Jefferson and his contemporaries faced in choosing accommodation or rebellion. The most fundamental political decision of all was the decision for independence, to break the bonds. And it was painful and it was difficult. You may remember at the Continental Congress, Second Continental Congress, there was a great big heavyset man from Virginia, Benjamin Harrison, and Elbridge Gerry of the gerrymandering family. I don't think they call themselves that anymore, but you know, was this little guy. And they were getting ready to sign the Declaration, and Harrison, the big guy, looked down at Gerry and said, "You know, when they hang us, it'll all be over for me real quick. You'll dangle for months." So most Americans, after all, were of British descent, and American culture in the decades leading up to the Revolution was quite deferential to and even celebratory of the monarchy. The whole structure of the lives of Jefferson's American ancestors and of his generation was built around membership in the British Empire. For many, if not most Americans, the hatred of King George III that marked the active revolutionary period was the exception, not the rule. Jefferson lived his political life and worked in a political time when nothing was certain. He knew, he felt, that America's enemies were everywhere. The greatest of these was Britain, and not only during the struggle for independence. Rather than recalling the Revolutionary War in its traditional way, as the armed struggle that lasted from Lexington and Concord in 1775 until the British defeat at Yorktown in 81, I think it's illuminating to consider looking at it the way Jefferson looked at it, which is that the struggle against Great Britain and its influence in American life opened in 1764, the end of the French and Indian War, and did not end until the Treaty of Ghent and the Battle of New Orleans brought the War of 1812 to a close in 1815. Seen this way, which is how Jefferson saw it and experienced it, Jefferson lived and governed in a 50 years war from 1764 to 1815. It was a war that was sometimes hot and sometimes cold, but it was always unfolding. It took different forms. There were traditional battlefield confrontations from 1775 to 1783 and again from 1812 to 1815. There were battles by proxy with loyalists and British allies among Native Americans. There were commercial strikes and counterstrikes. There were fears of political encroachment within the United States that could be aided by British military movements from Canada, Nova Scotia, or Britain's western posts, posts they declined to surrender after the Revolution. There were anxieties about disunionist sentiment in New England and in New York. There were terrors about monarchical tendencies wherever they might be. Jefferson thought he was in a perennial war. So he spoke and acted in tones and terms that may seem extreme to our ears, but which were natural if one saw the world as he saw it. From Alexander Hamilton's financial program to John Adams's weakness for British forms to the overt New England hostility toward his presidency, it may seem overheated. It certainly did to some of those who lived through the time, but it was real to him. And if we are to understand what he was really like and what life was really like for him, then we must see the world as he saw it, not as we know it turned out. So I'd like to offer three quick thoughts for us about our own time, some possible lessons to draw from Jefferson's era. One lesson is to strive mightily to resist reflexive partisanship. Not partisanship itself. Partisanship is part of the air we breathe for a democracy. That was clearly Jefferson's view. He once said that there have always been divisions of opinion in government since these questions troubled Greece and Rome. So disagreeing with one another is not the issue. It's when we reflexively do so. It's when I reject what you say because you're the one saying it. And Jefferson was a deep sinner on this point. In 1790, when he came back from France, he discovered he had been appointed Secretary of State in the newspapers, proving that leaks were a problem even then. He went to New York. He wanted to live on the Broadway, but couldn't find quarters. So he took up quarters on Maiden Lane, I believe, and immediately went to war with Alexander Hamilton. They were like two cocks in a pit every day. They fought over everything. They fought over the nature of a financial system. They fought over even the ceremonial of the presidency. Should George Washington repay visits or calls that were made to him? And they fought and they fought and they fought. And finally, President Washington had too much of it. So Washington wrote them both a letter. And this is what he said. How tragic it is, how unfortunate it is, that whilst we are encompassed on all sides with avowed enemies and insidious friends, that internal dissensions should be harrowing and tearing our vitals. Jefferson wrote back saying that he would not suffer the slanders of a man whose history, from the moment at which history had stooped to notice him, had been nothing but a tissue of machinations and lies against the country which had not only accepted him, but heaped its honors upon his head. Hamilton supporter in that same period wrote to Washington that, I think you ought to get a damn kicking, you redheaded son of a bitch. So, George Washington as family therapist was not a growth industry. That did not work. But Jefferson got better as the 1790s went on. He knew he had to reach out. As president, he would write his daughters and say, I am about to become an unpunctual correspondent, because Congress was coming to town. He had Congress down to dinner every day. He didn't mix Federalists and Republicans. This is not about being a bipartisan Valhalla or a blue ribbon commission. This is about his being able to build bonds between the lawmakers and he himself. But he worked and worked and worked at the politics of the personal, avoiding reflexive partisanship, reaching out. Two good things to look for. The other that I think is so important is, I think we want political leaders who are in tune with the larger sweep of the culture of our times. What had happened in those three or four centuries before the late 18th century in the United States? You had the Protestant Reformations. You had the entire structure of political thinking through the European Enlightenment shifting from the idea that society should be organized vertically to having it be organized more horizontally, that the divine right of kings was shifting to be understood as the divine right within each person to be a free agent. We failed, we failed, we failed to make that promise, to extend that idea to all people. Jefferson, as we've seen, fought for the greatest of causes and yet fell short of delivering justice to the persecuted and to the enslaved. They set in motion, however, these men long ago on this eastern seaboard, they set in motion a process to try to perfect that union. In 1859, Abraham Lincoln was invited to speak to a Jefferson birthday celebration. He couldn't do it. He wrote a letter from Springfield. This is what he said. All honor to Jefferson, to the man who, in the concrete pressure and the struggle for national independence by a single people, had the coolness, forecast, and capacity, it's a wonderful phrase, the coolness, forecast, and capacity to introduce into a merely revolutionary document an abstract truth, and so to embalm it there that today and in all coming days, it shall be a rebuke and stumbling block to the very harbingers of reappearing tyranny and oppression. Not a bad legacy.
Not a bad legacy, indeed. You've been listening to John Meacham. He's the best-selling author and historian of Thomas Jefferson, The Art of Power. And America is unimaginable without Jefferson or the other Virginia giants. The story of Jefferson, all honor to Jefferson, as Lincoln said. His story here on Our American Stories.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to have supervision, enhanced hearing, extraordinary reflexes, to be, dare we say, superhuman? Well, Roku's new Pro Series TV can't do any of that for you. But with a 4K screen, side-firing speakers, and a blazing fast refresh rate, it'll sure feel like it. Elevate your entertainment using all your favorite apps like iHeart and play all your music, radio, and podcasts with the new Roku Pro Series. Your senses aren't better. Your TV is.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, and spend wisely. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Try Greenlight risk-free today at greenlight.com/iHeart.
Tired of the winter cold? Don't worry, spring break season is right around the corner. And at Cheap Caribbean Vacations, it doesn't matter if you're traveling as a family or going on an adults-only getaway, they have beach deals for all types of all-inclusive vacays. Just book your spring break travel in March or April to unlock an extra $250 off your package price. This offer is valid through February 27th on vacation packages of 4 nights or more. Don't wait. Book now at CheapCaribbean.com.
On Saturday, February 22nd at 1:30 p.m. Eastern, it's the Pro Volleyball Federation's first All-Star Match. The league's biggest stars will clash in a can't-miss event hosted in the Indy metro area, home of the Indy Ignite. Catch every serve, spike, and save live on CBS. Don't miss this historic showdown of volleyball's finest. The Pro Volleyball Federation All-Star Match on February 22nd at 1:30 p.m. Be there.